Hello and welcome to another episode of Dice Exploder. Each week we take one mechanic and patiently watch it work its magic. My name is Sam Dunnewald and my co-host today is Ellen Delstol. First up, Dice Exploder is newly on Patreon. I launched last week, and right now behind the paywall you can get a 20-minute audio essay about Yaziba's bed and breakfast that friend of the show Kurt Refflin called Banger, he said, crying, and also a short autobiographical game I made about living through the Los Angeles fires back in January, with more to come. But today, we're back with LARPs. So far in this LARP miniseries, I've largely been talking with folks from the American LARP world who happen to know smart stuff about LARPs too. But I think a LARP season would be incomplete without talking to someone whose bread and butter is weekend-long Nordic LARPs, someone who actually came up in that community. And for me, that meant Ellen, the resident Nordic LARPer in the Dice Exploder Discord, who's always bringing us that Nordic perspective. And when I invited her on the show, she wanted to talk about shadows, a meta technique in LARP where you have players in the role of something other than a traditional LARP or RPG player character. Maybe they're stagehands turning out the lights because there's ghosts in this house. Maybe they're the character's worst fears who wander around and whisper into players' ears to egg them on into terrible actions and choices. They're special effects, or ghosts, or whatever else you want them to be. And, you know, let's just get into it today. Here is Ellen Delstol with Shadows. Ellen, thanks so much for being here on Dice Exploder.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yeah. Normally, I say, what are we here to talk about? But before we get into the specific thing that we're even here to talk about today, I wanted to talk about, like, what the heck is LARP and what's Nordic LARP specifically?
Yeah, that's pretty much the same question as what's in the RPG.
Yeah.
You know it when you see it, when you're in the scene. But the easiest way to answer this is that it's a design tradition of how you make LARPs and how you play LARPs in the Nordic countries. Because LARPs, unlike tabletop, developed more regionally. Mm-hmm. Like, you played with people who was a driving distance away. So within a country, within a region, there's often a design tradition associated with that region. I think one of the defining features of Nordic LARP is that a bit more than 25 years ago, they started to run a Nordic LARP convention for all the Nordic countries. And it was a quite discussion and theory-heavy convention. And at each convention, a book was published with texts about what's going on LARP and theories and techniques. And that's been published pretty much every year the last 25 years.
That yeah.
Built this community of learning and discussion and debate and discourse that made it a style that's it's very defining. Like,
yeah.
Very geeky, very designy, very theoretical.
Yeah. And I feel like we have a lot of those same conversations in the indie tabletop world, but much less formal. They're like people yelling at each other on Twitter and Discords and on forums and all these other places that have received much less archiving. So we're talking today about a particular LARP campaign. Maybe let's start with that. What game are we talking about here? What campaign are we talking about today? And what is its deal?
We will be talking about the contemporary horror LARP campaign På Gott och Ont, or in English, Of Good and Evil. And we can just say Of Good and Evil because that saves everyone a lot of confusion. Mm-hmm. It's a contemporary, very Nordic LARP campaign about a group facing different supernatural threats. It's nothing unique about the settings. All our inner teenagers love that shit.
Yeah, totally.
What makes it special is not the story, but on the design level that it's a transmedia game. Because we play as a LARP, we play more tabletop-like black box scenarios. We play by text. We have weird stuff that might show up in the mail.
Yeah, cool.
And they make audio clips, sound clips, and use very many different media to give an experience. And it goes on for 2 months of each year, with 3 big weekend events yearly, weekly missions you go on when you have an evening of LARPing. Countless emails and play by chat and everything. Very intensive for 2 months. Even within the Nordic LARPs, there it's sort of an extreme sport.
Yeah, because from my research, like an American LARP campaign is like you meet up once a month and you all pretend to be vampires, or you all pretend to be fantasy people hanging out in the woods, and that's kind of your thing. Maybe there's some mechanics and maybe there's not. At some point, I'll have someone from a vampire LARP on here to talk about it. And that, like, in a Nordic LARP campaign, maybe that's a similar kind of thing, but also maybe you're only meeting up, like, once a year for a big event or a few times a year for a big event. And it does seem like this is much bigger. Is that sort of, like, for a typical Nordic LARP, like, kind of campaign, how often would you be expecting to run something?
Well, it ranges from there are vampire LARPs that runs once a week to big production things. Like, we don't have the energy to set up this massive 500 people production every year, so they do it every other year.
Sure.
And campaigns is not the norm. Like, they're not strange, but perhaps 30% of the or less of the Nordic LARPs are campaign LARPs.
Cool. And when you're playing a campaign LARP, is it sort of like every event is sort of designed unto itself, or like tabletop, are you coming back to the sort of same set of mechanics every time? Or is this the kind of thing where like the mechanics are so secondary that like the question is kind of who cares?
Often the answer is the mechanics are so secondary that who cares. Often the mechanics is just bare bones safety stuff. If someone breaks a leg, this is what you should say to stop the game. But generally, I think there are things that always is the same. That this is a Viking village. Each year we do a feast LARP in this Viking village. And we've been doing it for 20 years, so people's kids are really grown up. And so on. And then they might have the same rules every year because they do a slice of life. But if you do something that varies, you might have very differently designed events for each LARP, depending on what you want to do with each event.
Totally. So, of good and evil, we're playing this extreme sport LARP of 2 months multimedia once a year. What mechanics specifically in this are we going to talk about today?
We're going to talk about shadows, a game mechanic that's much easier to explain by example than by its definition.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps we should start with a very confusing definition.
Yeah. Why don't I take a crack at this and then you can correct me when I'm inevitably wrong. So my understanding of what shadows is, imagine I'm just playing a vampire LARP and I'm my little vampire guy and I'm running around doing vampire things. There might be some other player of the game, like you, who is playing as my shadow, who is like the little devil or angel on my shoulder, who is whispering lies and ideas and thoughts for my character to have into my ear as I play. And because you are a real additional human being who's kind of following me around, other players can hear all that stuff. But the shadows are invisible to other characters. So they're these sort of like almost stage hands running around, helping manipulate the fiction as we play. And maybe that's literally just a stage hand. Maybe the thing that you're doing actually isn't like whispering into my ear. Maybe you're like moving a ghost around like someone who works at a haunted house in America. Maybe you're like really playing a part of my character. Like we're really, really intertwined in the way we are both playing one character. And there's this huge range in between that might all be referred to as shadows. But basically like people running around doing things that influence the fiction, but who don't have their own role, who are don't themselves exist inside of the fiction.
Yes, or are some sort of different character. Perhaps you're a literary ghost, a ghost that turns off on and off the lights and moves all your board around. But the point is that there's a person who's playing something that isn't a normal character, but will interact with the players and the environment in some way. They are the special effects in some way.
Yeah, totally. So, okay, give me an example from Of Good and Evil, what a shadow has been used for in that campaign.
If we start at the stagehand sphere of things, then for a horror LARP, you want the electricity to suddenly go off. You want the candles to blow out. You want the Oya boat to mow around. You want them to find the disturbing skull somewhere. And unless you spend an awful lot of money and preparation on doing everything with mechanically before the LARP, you will need to have a person that go out and turns off the lights or places that in. So on a very basic level, they're just people dressed often in some type of outfit that demarks them at shadows, not as player character. If you see the person dressed all in white, ignore them. They are shadows. Yeah. And you get really good at it. And then they used to stagehand stuff for things to work. On the other end of the things, we had one LARP that was all about dealing with or in the dark. And the shadows were, when they approach, your worst self arose. You were the worst version of yourself. And the shadows egged it on. They touched you, they pushed you. They whispered into your ear, aren't they all idiots? Shouldn't you punish them? And so on.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned touch in there specifically. And I'm curious sort of how you like negotiate the level of touch that is involved in a mechanic like that. Like, is it just set up ahead of time and you're sort of like telling people this is how it's going to be? If you're uncomfortable with that, let's have a conversation about how that goes. Or like, what's the sort of conversation around negotiating mechanics that require touch?
All events specify that this is the base level of touch expected. Mm-hmm. Of any time you can use calibration to signal that you are comfortable with what's going on. But yeah, you will have a base level of touch. Which are those that will have an instruction to be intrusive, there will always be some signal to opt out. Perhaps you're just holding out your hand in that no yet gesture, or you're using a safe word or something to de-escalate.
Cool.
But at the horror LARP, which I'm speaking about, you go there to be uncomfortable. So they will push your limits, but they will do so carefully and be attentive of your signals while doing so.
Totally. And that actually kind of brings us into talking about the effects of shadows here, because something I really love about the like darkest self version of shadows that you were talking about here is how great a tool this feels like it would be for pushing your limits while still giving you final say over your limits, right? Like someone is there egging you on, encouraging you to be your worst self, offering ideas for how you might be your worst self. But it is in the end, it's still like up to you what you do and like how far you go and how you implement things exactly. And I love that kind of balance of being pushed, but always having final say.
Yeah. And it's nice, especially if you got someone that really know how to just push you up to the edge until you can make the interesting decision. Do I do it?
Yeah. It's fun to live in that space of anticipation in any game.
In Nordic LARP, we talk a lot about alibi, that you need to be feel that you're allowed to do something, that you have the permission or have the excuse to do something. And a shadow can very effectively give you the alibi to something. I didn't choose to be an asshole. The shadows pushed me to it, so then I get to be a big asshole.
Yeah, I think alibi is such a smart concept that we could really stand to pull from in RPGs more. I think of it in the context of games that describe themselves as like play to lose games, where I think the like default tabletop RPG player, many tabletop RPG players at least, like come in with this idea that like their character is their precious little guy. Like, I want to protect my person and only have the best things happen to them. And that's kind of my job at the table, is to like be them, to advocate for them, and to do what's best for them. And some games that are sort of about getting your characters into trouble and getting fucked up only work when you sort of put a distance between yourself and your character a little bit more and allow your character to go get in trouble. When you start like getting joy from taking pot shots at your character, right, of getting them messy and getting them messed up. And I think that that kind of alibi of exactly what you're saying, right? Like, I know this is going to be a bad thing for my character. And I know that like, this might be me being an asshole to other people, but the game is giving me permission to do all that is, yeah, the label of it in Nordic LARP is so great.
But you see, I have a minor disagreement with that.
Please.
But because if we get back to the, I want to protect my character thing.
Yeah.
I think that's an instinct that's created by having a competitive mindset, the GM that have tried to punish you, and that learned behavior, and the learned expectation. If you come in and start playing games collaboratively from the start, you never develop that.
That's fair.
So like, it's maybe about unlearning and learning behaviors.
Yeah, yeah, because totally.
That's one of the things of Nordic LARP. I think it's less competitive and more collaborative and more communal. So in general, from everything from mechanics to how it's organized, and that depends on lots of cultural and economic factors, why it ended up that way. But yeah, you don't start getting those protective behaviors unless you learn them.
Yeah, totally.
But on the other hand, if you've been bullied, life have learned you all sorts of protective behaviors as well. So it's not just a game thing.
Yeah, like maybe you're pulling that stuff in from your real life, or maybe you're pulling that stuff in because that's the default dynamic in a game of Dungeons & Dragons, which is how most people are entering the American tabletop RPG hobby at the very least. I think that's a great point.
And then if you enter with LARPs, that's also competitive, where your character must make smart decisions, otherwise they are fucked.
Yeah.
Then that's also learns that behavior.
Totally, totally. So you've played with Shadows. I'm curious to hear, as a player, have you been in the context where like you have a darkest self shadow following you around? And if so, like, what is that like and how does that feel?
When the first time you play with Shadows, you think that this is the most stupid and annoying mechanic ever, at least for the first hour. Because you see them and you will react to them and you will be, oh no, I'm supposed to ignore you. And it feels disruptive the first time you do it. And then it quickly gets natural to ignore them, unless you have a great scene with them. So playing with them, you get to really dive into your character. If someone starts whispering to you to be your darker self, and are they not all idiots? Do you not despise them? You are better than them. Why would you help them? And so on. You can answer and have a monologue and express things that your character would not express to other characters, and explore parts of your character's mind and behavior you wouldn't otherwise. And it's also like having a personal cheerleader.
Yeah, totally.
That really plays to lift your actions, or plays to push down you if you want to be crushed into a small sobbing pile of emotions.
Yeah, yeah. What a gift it would be to have someone whose like whole job is to make your experience better. You know, like that. I mean, that's not like exactly what's going on with the shadow. Like, I'm going to ask you about playing as a shadow in a minute, but like, I feel like that feeling of being supported in that way would feel so good and so special. And that also brings us to what you just said, playing to lift, which is a concept that I know has... Is playing to lift originally an Oracle LARP concept? I think it is, right?
Yeah. So Susanne Wedjemoe, she wrote about the article and popularized the concept.
Yeah. And so tell me about playing to lift. Like, what is playing to lift? And maybe use Shadows as an example of how it might function.
Well, playing to lift came as a reaction to the playing to lose concept.
Mm-hmm.
Because if everyone thinks really hard to lose, everyone will end up sitting in their own corner crying, and not much is going on. Playing to lose is still a great concept. Playing to lift is about when you see a person crying in the corner, really going in there and engaging with them. And it might mean comforting them, or it might be making them cry even harder. Or it might be when someone gives the epic speech to really be a good audience and clap your hands. Or let the person playing a Casanova really seduce you.
Yeah. Even before I read the original Playing to Lift article and kind of learned the formal concept, I feel like I had discovered as a player myself that I had a better time when I went out there and just sat down and tried to identify what is everyone else at this table, in my case, like trying to do, like what do they want to happen in this game? And then how can I help make that happen in the most interesting way possible? How can I make other people's experience better? How can I be a supporting player for them? And that seems to be sort of the idea of playing to lift, of that playing. It's playing to lift up other people is the unspoken end of the sentence. It's being generous and supportive to others in what they're trying to do. Does that all feel right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's how it's meant to be.
How it's meant to be. Yeah, great. Well, we can keep the lid on that can of worms. But so shadows, in my mind, are this whole mechanic that is sort of inherently playing to lift for someone, right? Like you are in there yourself trying to make other people's experience better, whether that's turning out the lights or whether that's following around one other person, paying attention to what they're doing, and then whispering the most horrible thing you can think of into their ear specifically as we play. And is that right? What is the experience like of playing to lift and of being a shadow in particular?
Being a shadow is often about standing around in a way that's not disruptive, really studying the play, because often you're not just assigned to one player, then you're assigned to a concept. Or
yeah, like, totally.
At the love LARP, you might be the one, the shadow to push for love to happen, while another shadow will push at someone's self-doubt.
Mm-hmm.
So often you just wait, you're like a bird of prey circling, and then you see your opportunity and you dive in.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be something subtle as standing around and perhaps gently taking someone's hand, holding it, or it might be go up and screaming in someone's ear, or it might be putting a hand on someone's shoulder and gently guiding them towards something or away from something. Or it might be at the horror of throwing a chair across the room in a great sudden slammer.
Yeah. And I'm curious what it feels like to you to like be in that role, to be thinking about that kind of bigger picture and thinking about how you can support other people in that way. Like, what is the like satisfaction that you get from that? What is that experience like for you?
For me, partly it's the same as GMing a tabletop game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's partly the same skill set. Partly it is to be allowed to meddle in everything and really get into scene, making it worse, pouring some gasoline onto the fire.
Yeah.
And just making things happen. It's a lot of chaos. Your job is not to have all these feelings and stuff yourself. Your job is to make shit happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the alibi to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the sort of shit-eating grin that you have on as you describe that. Like, it really does like feel like this feeling of mischief almost that comes with playing the role.
Your next favorite game is on My First Dungeon.
Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon. Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon. Ho, 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 and welcome to My First Dungeon.
From Sad Space Cowboys,
Kamari takes out a lighter from their pocket and goes, this bar's next.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Let's go.
To death metal Viking cats.
Hello Kitty, you see Melody Tuffington flying through the air, jacked as shit, massive legs, to horny snowmen?
The sad part is that Joshua never gave Frosty a penis.
No.
And everything in between.
It was a dark and stormy night.
We've got something for everyone.
You're a special Gertrude girl in a special Gertrude role. Happy birthday, happy birthday. I'm not a skeleton.
Learn the game, then hear it in action.
That's Snake Eyes minus two. That's a zero.
Snake Eyes, that means that we have our very first plot twist. Anytime somebody rolls doubles, we get a plot twist.
So grab some headphones.
And get lost in a story with us.
I'll be honest, I don't know all the rules of it. We'll kind of figure that out as we go. But do you want to just play? I've got some great stories to tell you.
And remember,
if you're having fun, you're already doing it right.
Oh, fuck!
Let's talk about the visual effects challenge.
Yeah.
Sometimes you will just have someone dressed all in black or all in white, perhaps a hooded or cloak, something that sets them apart from the rest of the characters. They will be visually distinct, so you know when you see them at the corner of your eye, you're just gonna ignore them.
Yeah.
But if you have a shadow that somehow plays a part in fiction, like we had a lot where there were shadows who were ghosts. At first, they walked around pale makeup, general ghosty look. But as the horror LARP became more and more feverish, nightmarish, and so on, these everyday looking ghosts became more and more disturbingly clown-like. And that's like clown noses and bloods and their hair's going all crazy, and they started carrying around weird objects, and you're half ignoring them and half seeing them. That really sets the mood.
Yeah.
You're not directly engaging with them.
That's incredible. I don't have anything to say to that except for that's fucking wild. It's so cool there how that's identifying almost like it's not quite a side effect, but like the way people are going to have learned the behavior to ignore the shadows and then taking advantage of it. I love the way that that's thinking like two steps ahead to how are people going to be feeling an hour into this.
Yeah, at that particular law, where you were supposed to ignore the shadows unless they were explicitly making contact with you.
Right.
If they spoke to you, you could answer, and then your character went into this sort of daydream. And other players were supposed to ignore that they're having a conversation with the shadow, because in character, you just see them staring blankly into space.
Yeah.
So then you could have these long monologues and discussions with these absurd clown ghosts. And then they let you go, and then you didn't quite remember the conversation.
Interesting.
Perhaps as a weird memory, but yeah.
It's almost like making space to do a little theatrical direct address to the audience in a medium that doesn't have an audience.
Yeah. In Nordic law, we seldom discuss mechanics, but we talk about meta-techniques.
Oh, yeah,
shadows
sure.
Shadows is a meta-technique because it's on the meta level in some way.
Yeah. I want to talk a little more about like playing as a shadow. You wrote in our outline here that like good shadowing takes skill. And that seems very apparent to me in the same way that good GMing takes skill. But I'm curious to hear you talk about like, why do you think it takes skill and what skill do you think it takes to play as a shadow?
I think playing as a shadow is all about playing lift. Mainly lift the players and the scenes, but also if you have a lock with a strong overall team and storyline, your actions as a shadow should lift that storyline as well.
Mm-hmm.
And playing to lift means that you need to find something to lift. You can't create something out of nothing. But you need to watch people. You need to see who are doing great right now, having an awesome team and don't need any input at all.
Yeah.
Who is just at the moment where a little push or a little thing would make their game so much better? And who's looking like out of character, lost right now, where I could really go in and engage as a shadow to bring them into the game or give them some direction or give them some attention like a GM would for a player that wasn't as engaged.
Yeah. It's interesting that I think of the GM in a traditional tabletop RPG as being a very heavy role, maybe is a good word for it. Like they're always present. The GM is just always there and involved in their way. And I feel like shadows are kind of on the opposite end of that. Like even if they are also kind of keeping a bird's eye view of what's going on and always maybe available to step in and make an offering, make a contribution, they feel like they are intended to be used with so much more of a light touch than the GM sort of controlling the entire fucking world and like being so omnipresent. And that feels better to me. Like, I don't know. I've spent a lot of time in the past decade like pushing back against the idea of the GM having so much power. And I love the way that shadows are much subtler, much smaller. As you were kind of saying, like here to just give someone like a little push to put them over the top. That feels like a really nice way to not end up with the uncomfortable, sometimes power imbalance of a GM with a ton of power and players with less.
Yeah, yeah. As a shadow, a really bad shadow will be pushing you around, interrupting what you have to say rather than inviting something to happen, and ruining it. Like, if you have a pair of lovers that is having a quarrel and you as a shadow want this small subtle thing, maybe to make them break up, maybe to make them forgive each other, you need to keep it subtle and not ruin the what's happening chemistry between the players. You just need to add to what's happening and subtly affect the chemistry and what's going on.
Being a spice on top of the scene instead of trying to bake the whole scene yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, there's one other thing about shadows that I really wanted to make explicit as we're talking about them, which is that I love the way that they take what would otherwise be subtext and turn it into text, especially in the context of a LARP. Because in a tabletop game, I feel like people are constantly doing the thing of like, okay, my character does this because they're thinking this. And then all the players at the table kind of know what I'm thinking. I can just share that with them in the third person out of character. But in character, they don't have to like literally go up to someone and reveal, this is how I'm feeling right now in order to get the information out. But when you are LARPing, you don't necessarily have that tool. Like you're in character the whole time. And so you can't just tell people how you are secretly feeling right now. And it feels like shadows are this really cool tool to help broadcast that. Even if it's not like me myself being the person who's the origin of the feeling that's getting broadcast, like it feels really effective and helpful for a shadow to come in and take some of my feelings out of subtext for players and to make them text, to sort of like add some transparency to what I'm thinking for other players in the scene. Does that like track to you?
Yeah, and you can explicitly, in some ways, seek out shadows. You see a shadow hovering nearby, and you sort of move close into them, and then you say, oh, my self-doubt is terrible right now.
Yeah.
And you can slide into having a monologue, basically, with the shadow as the other part of your character's thinking.
Yeah. So you can, like, court a shadow and, like, trigger that thing yourself. Yeah. Yeah, okay, so is there more you have to say about shadows kind of across the board? Like, what else do you want to say about shadows?
Well, I've seen them used in tabletop play as well.
Yeah, okay, great. What's an example of that look like?
There's a Swedish and French in the RPG, Svartavkval. It's a vampire RPG where someone played the inner beast of the vampire. By standing up and going between the character that's in focus during the scene and giving it suggestions and commands at the tabletop game. And that's also very effective. So even if you're just doing tabletop games, using shadows or using the techniques of shadows, or perhaps going behind a player and leaning in and whispering things to them as they are having the scene, or putting a heavy hand on their shoulder, and don't you feel that you're responsible for everything, and like pushing down on those shoulders a bit. It's also effective. You can play around.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of alluding to this in the last thing I was saying, but I feel like I do see this all the time in the tabletop games that I play, of just sort of, oh, maybe you and another friend of ours are doing a little scene, but at a pause in the scene, I'll just kind of say to you as people outside of the scene, hey, is the thing that's going on here that, like, actually you have a crush on each other? Or is, like, do you feel this way right now? Just, like, pitching an idea, and then we can talk about that. We can kind of pause the scene, and you can be like, no. Or you can pause the scene. You can not pause the scene and just immediately be like, oh, yeah, that rules. And then, like, get back into it. But that collaborative pitching of ideas to each other about each other's characters, I love the way that this mechanizes that. I'd love to see more ways to mechanize that, but also it doesn't feel like something that has to be mechanized. It doesn't feel like something you have to have a technique for. It does feel like something you can just sort of do by talking to each other in a tabletop game.
Yeah. And I think in the Nordic scene, shadows have been used for about 25 years at least. But I think this is a technique that's popped up all over the world many times independently. Sure. Because we all seen theater, we all seen film, we know these tropes. And implementing them in role-playing medium, it's not far.
Yeah. It's easier. Like it, yeah, totally. Any final words here before we kind of call it for the day?
Well, try it. You can always stop if you don't like it.
Ellen, thanks so much for being on Dice Exploder.
Thank you.
No homework this week. I'm in Minnesota and we've got a snow day. Thanks again to Ellen for being here. You can find her on Blue Sky at Ellen Dustol. As always, you can find me on Blue Sky at Dice Exploder or on the Dice Exploder Discord. And you can support the show on Patreon. My games are at sdunwald.itch.io. Our logo was designed by Sporgery. Our theme song is Sunset Bridge by Purely Gray. And our ad music is Lily Pads by my boy, Travis Tesmer. And thanks to you for listening. I will see you next time.